Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. From the beginning of the pandemic, there was concern about how stay-at-home orders would impact children. A constant thread throughout COVID-19 has been understanding the toll, if any, remote learning would have on students, followed by passionate debates about the best way to balance public health while reducing harm. We've had a good number of these types of conversations on Inside because the issue of mental health and social isolation is far from a fixed topic. It does evolve, and it often involves a lot of anecdotes of personal experiences. But researchers are continuing to learn more and better understand how varied the consequences of the pandemic can be. A new study looked at a specific age group, teens between 14 and 16 years of age. Researchers looked at how in-person learning versus hybrid or fully remote shaped high schoolers' mental health and their overall experience with school, as well as their academic performance. Drew Singel is an associate professor at UC Davis and lead author of the study, and joins us now with how teens were impacted by online learning during COVID-19. Good morning, Drew. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off with your academic background and what led to this research.
So we found, I had a conversation with my colleagues, and we realized that because of the disparity in how the states and the country overall approached online learning or approached the pandemic and schooling for adolescents, that we had conducted, in effect, a natural experiment where some adolescents were attending school in person, some were in a hybrid model, some were online. It differed by state. It differed by school district. It differed within families. And so we started to think, what impact would that have on these three groups of adolescents? Would they come out of the pandemic at the same level in terms of their feelings about school and mental health, or would there be differences as a function of differences in schooling?
What led to narrowing down to 14 and to 16-year-olds?
Because that age, social development is so important at that age. That sense of social connection, forming groups, forming friendships, maintaining those friendships. Because it's so important at that age, we thought that taking adolescents out of school, being in online learning, would cut out those social connections that they so desperately need at that time.
Yeah. And you also added another layer. You included and accounted for gender identity, including those who identify as transgender, as well as gender nonconforming. What went into accounting for gender identity as opposed to other demographics?
Sure. There are also differences in mental health with gender identity. And adolescents who identify as transgender or gender nonconforming oftentimes aren't focused on in research to begin with. And when they are, the research shows that they also tend to struggle in terms of their feelings about school and mental health. So we wanted to account for that in this study.
So how did you go about conducting this survey?
We were fortunate to receive funding from the Susan Crown Exchange and were able to conduct a national sample of adolescents using a Qualtrics panel. And we were able to survey a little over 1,200 adolescents across the United States.
What went into formulating the questions?
It was a really broad overview. We knew that the pandemic had affected every aspect of human life, certainly of adolescent life. And so we wanted to account for that in some small way in the survey by focusing on their media use, by focusing on their feelings about school, their sense of social connection, and their mental health.
So you obviously went into this research, you know, with an inkling at least that there is a problem that you wanted to better understand. But did the findings surprise you? Any of the findings surprise you?
These are some of the most surprising findings of any research I've conducted, simply in that we showed that online learning had exhibited a difference in adolescence across every single variable that we measured. Adolescents in online learning relative to their peers who were in a hybrid model or who were in person felt they were more negative about school. They felt that their schoolwork was less meaningful. They experienced a greater drop in grades. They felt less satisfied with their sense of social connection. They increased in terms of pathological or addictive media use, and their mental health was worse.
Yeah, you're probably what you are confirming are a lot of feelings that people have within households over the last 2.5 years, going from anecdotes to actually quantitative research and findings. You also looked at these four categories: loneliness, social anxiety, depression, and anxiety. Now, it was higher for hybrid and virtual learners, as well as those who identify as transgender and gender nonconforming. But overall, I mean, what I'm hearing for you is that the numbers overall were concerning because they look that way to me, even with my unresearcher eye.
Yeah, it's rare when you study humans, when you study adolescents in particular, for the pattern in the data to be so consistent. Usually you find that maybe online learners would be worse off in just anxiety, for example. But that just wasn't the case here. It was across the board, every aspect that we measured, they were just doing worse. Coming out of the pandemic, this was in the spring of 2021.
Were you surprised that it also included hybrid learning as well as virtual remote learning? That was hybrid learning a buffer at all when compared to fully in person to fully online?
Actually, yes. And that was an interesting finding from this. In most cases, there was no difference between adolescents who were in person and hybrid, which would indicate to me that simply by being in person 2 or 3 days a week, that was enough of a buffer, enough of a protective factor for those adolescents so that their data didn't look like those of the adolescents who were in completely virtual learning.
The research also included a component of social media, and that includes video gaming as well. And what I found interesting was that in the report, it said that social media can be a protective mechanism in response to online learning during the pandemic. And I think often when we think of social media, we think of it, you know, overall as negative with some silver linings. But how can social media be a protective mechanism when we can't physically be with each other?
Sure. Our thinking on that was that if you take adolescents out of their normal social context, that perhaps, hopefully, they can account for that in some way through their media use. And anecdotally, and the data support this as well, social video gaming increased quite dramatically among adolescents during the pandemic, where they couldn't get together with their friends, but they could play video games together and still communicate synchronously through those video games. Or they could use social media to hang out with their friends in some sort of way, watch the same videos together, communicate fairly synchronously. And the data we see some support for that in the data, that adolescents in virtual learning context were able to use media to socially connect with their friends.
But it also did fall short. When does it veer into problematic or counterproductive use?
Sure. We accounted for problematic or what we call pathological use when media use causes conflict with parents, conflict with siblings, when it cuts into the time an adolescent can spend sleeping, when they struggle to turn off the device and use it in a pathological or addictive way.
Mm. When looking at video gaming and more broadly social media, are they distinctive or are they kind of, or did you kind of lump them in together in terms of the impact it could have on teenagers?
We looked at them separately, but what we found is that the relationships were fairly similar. That pathological video game use or pathological social media use is associated with poor mental health outcomes among adolescents, and media use for social connection can, in some cases, be associated with better mental health outcomes for adolescents.
I mean, as a parent or just in a space where you take care of children, even at school, how do you want them to think about this research?
What I think it points out is that if you are a parent or a supportive adult in the life of an adolescent who is in online learning, or an adolescent who identifies as transgender or gender nonconforming, we have these two groups of adolescents, at least in spring of 2021, that were quantitatively doing worse than their peers who were in hybrid and in online, hybrid and in-person learning. And I think it's important to check in with your adolescents and understand that that's the experience that they had, that's where they are, and check in and see where they are now. We're still trying to understand the length that these effects may go. We're not sure if adolescents in online learning in 2021, now that we're back in person, if they've risen back up to the same level of their peers. But it's important to check in if you're at home with your adolescent and see how they're doing, see how their mental health is. Check in on their media use. Make sure that they're not using media before bed, because that cuts into sleep time and that has a negative effect on mental health as well.
Yeah, that's good advice for adults as well, myself included.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, given that you really honed in on gender identity as well, what were the big takeaways when looking at students who identify as transgender or gender nonconforming?
It's a very similar story to the adolescents who were in online learning. Adolescents who identify as transgender or gender nonconforming compared to adolescents who identify as male or female, felt significantly worse about school. They felt less connected socially. They experienced worse mental health and they were significantly higher in media use and particularly pathological media use.
How do you want teenagers to understand what they might be going through?
I think it's important to know that they are hurt, that I think when we I always think that when we were making these decisions, it was the adults making decisions for adolescents, and that's typical. But we now know that at some point we need to take adolescents' voices into account. And that's what we were trying to do in this survey, to understand from what their experience was so that we can now work with them to help them to grow and thrive as we move through the pandemic.
You know, your research highlights or just confirms an issue that has been talked about since the onset of the pandemic. But in terms of solutions, what do you think can be done? What recommendations do you have?
I think that, again, understanding that we have these two groups of adolescents who are quantitatively different from other adolescents, and understanding that we can have support for these adolescents in school, making sure that if your school was in online learning for an extended period of time, that supports need to be in place. Resources need to go to these kinds of schools. Schools that have transgender, gender non-conforming populations. These are adolescents that we can target with interventions to help them reach the same level of their other peers.
Drew, thank you so much for the research and for taking time to share it with us.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Drew Singel is an associate professor at UC Davis and lead author of a study about how teenagers, specifically 14 to 15 and 16-year-olds, were impacted by online learning during COVID-19. Up next, the Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC, joins us with their annual report on the state of California's water and really the difficult decisions to thrive with less. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. We'll be back in just a few minutes.